This is episode number 107.
It's time for Road Trekking, the podcast. Traveling North America in a small motor home. Exploring, camping, boondocking, embracing the RV lifestyle, and sharing tips and where to go and how to keep things running right. Here's award-winning journalist Mike Wendland and his network of road trekking reporters.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 107 of our Road Trekking RV Lifestyle Podcast. And no matter what kind of an RV you have, a motorhome, a towable trailer, a tent, even if you're just dreaming about getting an RV someday, this show is for you, because here we talk about getting out there, enjoying God's amazing creation, meeting interesting people, boondocking, discovering fun places, and using the right gear and technology to enhance our RV lifestyle. So we welcome you to this podcast and are honored that you choose to put us in your ears this week. Well, we've got lots to talk about on this episode of the podcast being released on Wednesday, September 28th, the very last week of September in the year 2016. And wow, I just can't believe how fast this year has gone by. It is booming past us. The first hints of cold weather are spreading across the country. The trees are starting to turn. And this is my favorite time of the year. And I think it's also the favorite time of the year of my lifelong traveling companion and my bride, who joins me right now. Hi, Jennifer.
Hello, Mike.
We had a great weekend. We were up in the boondocking woods of northern Michigan. And it was nice up there.
When the sun shines, you can't beat being outdoors in the fall.
No, the fall is great. We have a big trip coming up in a week, 10 days, up in the Porcupine Mountains at the far western, northwestern end of the Michigan Upper Peninsula. That's true wilderness country up there. And we're supposed to be there during peak fall foliage, so that will be a lot of fun.
It will be beautiful.
Got about 50 people coming up to that one, lots of hiking and photography, and we're looking forward to that. This can be an interesting podcast today because we have so many questions and comments that we've gotten in the last several weeks from our listeners that we thought we just kind of would go with those, answer those, and we'll see how it all goes. But we have a lot to talk about out there. We had fun. We took the granddaughters up camping. And that, of course, that's going to be your tip in just a couple of minutes. But that was the first time we've actually been able to take the grandkids with us on one of our adventures.
And I enjoyed it. I hope they enjoyed it as much as I did.
Well, I know somebody who enjoyed it even more.
Oh, Bo. Oh, my.
Yeah. One of the reasons we like this particular spot up in Michigan, and if you can go on the blog, you can read an account and see. I think we got a video up as well. We did a live Facebook feed from up there. But we like to take Bo, and because Bo can run off leash in the woods, and boy, did he run.
The minute he got out of the road trek, he just took off. He was bounding up and down. I've never seen that dog so happy.
Yep, looked like a kangaroo dog. And we got him one little thing where I let him go after some deer. I mean, I knew he wasn't going to catch the deer. He just needed to know that he could chase him. And that was fun. And he came right back to us. He didn't go too far.
He didn't run far. Don't worry about the deer. He wasn't a threat to them by any means, but he sure had fun.
Yeah, I think he thinks deer are another dogs to play with because we have them all over our yard here and he doesn't know what to make of them. But he did like to run with them up there in the wilderness. So anyway, we've got lots coming up this weekend. And before we get going, let's tell you about Rad Power Bikes, one of our sponsors, and why these are so cool for RVers. Rad Power Bikes are electric bikes, and Rad Power Bike is an electric bike manufacturer. Besides probably making about the best e-bike that you can find in the market, they have this wonderful distinctive in that their prices are so good. And the reason their prices are so good is because they offer direct-to-consumer pricing on their premium electric bikes. In other words, there's no middleman, there's no retail chain of markups between you and the manufacturer. You deal just with them, and you'll find that their rates are often as much as 50-60% less than what you'll find through the conventional retail chain. Rad Power Bikes are often, they have three different e-bike models They fit a wide variety of your wants and needs. They can go 20 to 40 miles on a single charge with no pedaling. The bikes do the pedaling for you, or you work with the throttle and they have five different levels of pedal assist. They'll give you that added boost, or you can combine pedaling and then pedal assist, however you want to do it. And you can go even further. They can go as fast as 20 miles an hour with zero pedaling. Three models. One is made to carry cargo. A lot of people in Class B motorhomes and Class A and Class C are taking these with them, and then they use these for their transportation around the campground, around the area. They're really neat bikes, and we want to just tell you to go look them up. They're at radpowerbikes.com, RadPowerBikes.com. And like I said, you will save a whole bunch of money because they're priced at often less than half of a comparable bike on the market because the dealer retail markups are cut out. And if you use the code word road trekking, you will get an extra $75 off your purchase price. So check them out, radpowerbikes.com, and let them know you heard about them on Road Trekking.
Is it a gadget, a recipe, a tip? Whatever she has in store for us, it promises to make the RV lifestyle a little more fun or efficient. Here's Jennifer with her RV tip of the week.
Today's tip has to do with making the front seats into a bed on a Class B motorhome. We just came back from a boondocking getaway in northern Michigan with our two grandchildren. Now, our Road Trek CS Adventurous XL best sleeps too. So with me and the two granddaughters, that meant Mike and Beau were outside in a tent. No problem there. Though Mike may have a different opinion after sleeping on the hard ground, but that's another topic. This tip has to do with sleeping three in the Road Trek. I made the back into two twin beds. 13-year-old Wawa slept on the passenger side bed, and I had the driver's side twin. So where to put 10-year-old Rachel? Up front, of course. Now, Road Trek and its dealers sell a sort of folding bed that works, but we improvised and found a great solution. We brought along a thick 4-inch folding pad that we had used back in our tenting days. What did we do to make a bed for Rachel? We pushed the driver and the passenger seats back, pulled out one of the tables, and put that across the space between the two seats. Then we put the 4-inch pad about the size of a twin bed right across the seats. The table gave solid support. Rachel's sleeping bag went on top of the pad, and she was snug as a bug in a rug. She says she slept great and was very comfy. The configuration is fine for kids. An adult could manage there in a pinch, but we wouldn't recommend it. We'll put a photo of Rachel and her sleeping arrangements in the show notes for this episode at roadtrekking.com/107. Rachel and Wawa are already looking forward to their next boondocking trip with us. Mike says he needs a little more padding for the tent outside. Do you have a tip you'd like to share? Use the leave voicemail link on the roadtrekking.com website. It lets you record a message using the built-in microphone in your computer smartphone or tablet, and then automatically sends it to me. I love hearing from you.
Well, that was a lot of fun, and it was nice to take the kids. Rachel was comfy, and I was not. It's my own fault.
We won't get into that.
Well, people want to know, and I will admit I just didn't listen to my wife because I was just happy. We have an inch and a half pad that we put on top of our sofa bed when you and I sleep in the Road Trek.
No, you said on top of sofa bed.
Yeah, on top of the sofa bed.
Yeah, instead of on top of hard surface, yeah. Like ground.
But I said, well, I'll just take that inch and a half pad that I normally put on top of the sofa bed, and I'll put that in the tent.
And I offered you two of our inch and a half pads because I knew 1.5 wasn't enough. But you were so excited about sleeping in your tent outside. You get so excited about life. And we get so busy getting out the door that I didn't take the time to get the big pad.
I didn't want to take something else. I didn't want to buy an air mattress. And anyway, an inch and a half is not enough to sleep on the hard ground, at least for me.
And I told you the cushion that Rachel used, that four inch thick pad, that isn't enough for an adult on a hard surface.
Yeah, I think you're right. So we have bigger, we have other solutions for that. I just didn't take it in. But, you know, I had fun out there in the tent. Bo loved it. He thought that was great. There was a deer that came through the campground in the middle of the night. And did you hear that when we woke? Did
he wake I heard up? Him barking.
Yeah, he snuck his nose out and made sure that deer left the campground. And then he was very tired. He came right back in, popped down in the tent and slept right through morning with me. So, but it was fun to take the grandkids. And it was really fun to be outside, as it always is, every time we get away in the road truck. And you know, from big campgrounds to Walmart lots to boondocking, it's all good.
You know, sometimes it seems so hard to get out the door to pack everything and get everything freshened up for a trip, but it's always worth it.
Always worth it. Well, we've got to do that because we're about ready to head throughout. We're going to experience fall in the north, and we're going to spend a lot of time on the road starting next week.
I have got to get my jeans out, my long pants. I've got to get the dust off from everything.
It is getting cold.
Yeah.
Yeah, it got down to 45 that night, and I was fine in the tent with the dog, except for the hard ground. But once it gets below 40, it's pretty cold outside, and oh my gosh, we had the heat on. It was the first time we've had to have the heat on.
I was too hot in the road trek. I had the window open.
Yeah, and we didn't. But how'd you like those heated floors?
The heated floors were very nice. When you get up, you have nice toasty feet.
Well, anyway, Bo and I called the Princess Palace for you and the girls in the road track while we were out there.
And I called what you slept in, the doghouse.
Yeah, well, it was the doghouse. Hey, Jennifer's Tip of the Week is brought to you by Good Sam, the world's largest and most popular organization for RVers. It's celebrating its 50th year this year. Here's an address for you, goodsam.com/roadtrekking. Why do you want to go there? Because if you go to goodsam.com/roadtrekking, you can get a year's membership for $27. And with that, listen to the savings you get, because the savings are going to more than offset that $27 membership. Because the first thing you get when you sign up at goodsam.com/roadtrekking is you get a certificate for $25 off a good night's stay at a Good Sam RV park and campground. There's 2,100 of them around the country. And thereafter, every other time you go to one of those campgrounds, you save 10% off their normal nightly rate just by being a member. That's not the only way you save. You also save when you buy fuel at Pilot Flying J truck stops all across North America. Show them your Good Sam card, you get another discount. And then everybody's favorite RV accessory detailer, of course, detailed store, is of course the Camping World RV accessory retailer. Every time you shop there, you'll save even more money when you go to checkout, show your Good Sam card, and you'll do fine. So $27 fee is more than made up in savings, and you get to be part of an RV community of over 1.65 million members. The Good Sam Club. Just go to goodsam.com/roadtrekking.
Questions. You've got them. Mike and his network of road trekking reporters have the answers. Here's one of our listener RV questions of the week.
Well, this one, first one, is not so much a question as it is sharing some information. And this is a guy who was with us at the Hershey RV show recently, America's largest Hershey show, or largest RV show in Hershey, Pennsylvania. And he was excited to go look at the Road Trek's the parent company, the Irwin-Hymer Group of North America, was showing off some of their new RVs, including the new Active, this brand new Class B motorhome. And that's the one that has the bed that folds over. It kind of stores up on the side like an old Murphy bed, and it comes across the beautiful queen size. He really liked what he saw, but he was hoping for a couple of other things, and he's got some interesting news that he wants to pass on.
Hi, love your podcast. Just a note on the Hymer. I got an email from their customer service, and they said they were in a rush at the Hershey show to put those units up there. And they're going to come out with a longer model after the first of the year with beds that go lengthwise instead of crosswise. I also inquired about that bed that when it was up, it was like a pallet pulled up. They designed this very beautiful, concise layout, and they put this thing that looked like somebody threw in an extra bed. bed that should be hidden away in a closet. But in their literature, they had a nice finished back on the bed. So I asked them again, do we get the finished back, or do we get that thing that you brought up there to Hershey, Pennsylvania? And she said again, they didn't have time to prepare the vans. Everything was done in a rush just to make the show. So I'm looking forward to the new Heimers after January 1st, because that sort of 19-foot base is really great, but I had like 3 steps, and then I was in bed. And in the back, there really wasn't sitting space when the bed was up, like you would have in a Pleasure Way or a Road Tech or one of the competing vans. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Well, those tires. Thanks for calling in. I'm glad that you're excited about that. The one they had was on the short frame for the Dodge ProMaster, and that was the one that they were showing at the show. I think they had 4 of them, and all of them were sold.
What I liked was the thickness and the comfort level that those mattresses offered. I was totally blown away by that.
Yeah, it didn't bother me that it... Now, that one, as he said, the way it was set up, you sleep with your head on side to side rather than length. And they are coming up with the longer version of the... That's, I think, the SRT or the shorter version of the ProMaster. But they are coming up with a new one. And that bed pallet, that was just shown to show you how it comes down. That wasn't really the finished look of as you learn when you call. So, but I think they're going to do real well with that. It's a very compact. It's got a lot of neat innovations on it. The Heimer Active, brand new to the Class B market in North America.
I am excited by the idea of the 2 twin beds with that nice, thick, comfortable mattress.
Yeah, it's a neat machine. So we'll probably see some of the newer models of that in Louisville right after Thanksgiving. That's the big industry show for RVs. Not open to the public, but we always go to that one. It's another one of those shows we always attend, and that's where the industry kind of shows off to each other, to its peers, what they've come, and I'm sure we'll see some new stuff there. So anyway, that was a good question. Now, let's get to some of your questions that came in this week, and we have a whole bunch of them, so we will do our best to get them all, but let's see what we can find here. And here is the first one from Bruce.
Hello, this is Bruce Van Howling. We are camping in western Colorado in our Sprinter RV, and one night the temperature dropped to 30 degrees, and last night the temperature dropped to 28 degrees. We seemed to be fine. Our water did not freeze. We were running our heater and keeping the temperature about 60 degrees inside of the coach. We are wondering if anybody has more accurate information on how cold you can actually camp before your water will freeze up if you're running your heater in the coach. We would appreciate any input regarding that. Thank you.
Well, you can tell fall's coming, can't you?
You can.
I've seen a lot of pictures of folks that have been posting on our Facebook, Road Trekking, the Facebook group, photos of snow out there. Utah, Colorado, they've had a lot of snow. So, but to Bruce's question, you are right on the edge. Now, because you're running the heater and you're keeping the inside warm, it would take a long time, and by long I mean 12, 14, 18, 24 hours for it to freeze. So the guide that you want to use is when the temperature is going to drop, say 28 or below, and stay there for a day or so, then you have to be concerned about freezing. But when it's just dropping to that at night and then it warms up during the day, you can go quite a while. You can go quite a while.
Okay, that surprises me that 30 and 28, that you don't have to get it winterized.
Well,
because I remember Kentucky, how we froze up coming home and we were in Kentucky.
Sure, but we drove home. It had dropped to about 28 in Kentucky 1 year coming back, and it was cold. It was really cold. It was in the 20s from Kentucky as we hit north into Michigan, but we were driving for 8 hours and we were driving, so it was even colder as that cold air was rushing across. That's when we froze up, the only time I think we've ever frozen up. But in general, if you are camping and the temperature takes a drop down to into the upper 20s and it's only for a couple hours at night and you have heat in the vehicle, you're not going to freeze up. It takes a little longer than that. So, but that's interesting to hear that it's getting that cold. I guess it's time to do a story on winterizing pretty soon.
It is time. It makes me sad to have to winterize.
And it's tough for us because we travel all the time. We travel year round. We don't store our unit. We drive it during the day. If we're home in Michigan, I use it as a second vehicle. But you do have to winterize it when the temperature is below freezing for prolonged periods of time. For us, it usually amounts that we winterize it 3 or 4 times because we travel all the time. We go down south where it's warm and we don't certainly need it winterized there, and we de-winterize it and then we have to winterize it. It's not a complicated procedure. You just want to follow the steps, and depending on what kind of an RV you have, the instructions will be in your manuals, and we'll talk more about that in a week or two when everybody has, and maybe in 2 or 3 episodes when everybody has to really start thinking about it.
Now, I think you've made everybody say, how much does it cost when we winterize? How much antifreeze do we use? What is approximately
I do
the
mine,
cost?
I can do mine with 3 gallons of antifreeze, and antifreeze for an RV, you get RV antifreeze, and it's about, what, $4 a gallon. You can get it cheaper at Walmart sometimes, 3-something. And almost all Walmarts have them. That's why I don't worry about winterizing coming back. People, I can't find an RV. You don't need an RV dealership. It's really simple to do. You need a funnel so you can pour it in your water tank, and that's about it. And you run your water tank, and you keep your filters clean, and you know you've got. It depends on every RV you have, but for me, I can do it in about a half hour, and 3 gallons of antifreeze. And I always buy an extra gallon or two because we still use the toilet when we're in the winter. We just flush it with antifreeze. But hey, we'll get to that whole thing. We don't have to worry about that yet for another month anyway. So give us a couple episodes. We'll talk more about winterizing. But Bruce, out there in Colorado, as you have found out, if the temperature drops into the 20s for a little while, a couple, 3 hours, you're not going to freeze up, especially if you've got the inside heated. If it gets a prolonged period of time, then you'd want to take a look at it.
Hi, my name's Joanne. I'm a semi-retired teacher. I live in Ontario on the Bruce Peninsula. I read about your Tobermory trip, and I thought, oh, gee, wouldn't I have loved to go up there and meet some RV people. I'm new to this. I just bought a 2001 Popular, and it's a 190. And I'm still getting used to all the components, which is kind of a stretch for me. I'm a widow. Anyway, yeah, I'm thinking about heading down to Florida or parts south sometime in October. I do have a traveling partner, I think. She and I are taking our own vehicle. She does not have a road trek, so she'll be staying in motels and I'll be roughing it. Haha, I guess you call it roughing it. Well, I don't call it roughing it. I think I'm in first class. Anyway, do you have any advice for anybody going down that way? As insofar as where to stay, she's going to the Naples area. And most of the RV parks I see just don't appeal to me. They look like cement pads. I've looked at the state parks, but as a single person, single woman, they look kind of lonely. What I'm interested in is doing some hiking and nature trails and, you know, all that outdoorsy stuff. And most of the stuff that I see people doing down there involve shuffleboard and, I don't know, potlucks in big RV community clubs. So I know you're an expert. I love listening to your blog. I just want to meet up with some young 60-somethings. I'm 61. So anyway, that's my piece. And I love listening to you, and I hope you can keep in touch. Thank you so much. And I hope you like Tobermory. It's our little piece of paradise. Thanks. Bye.
Oh, we did love Tobermory, Joanne. Oh, my. I'm smiling at that, Joanne, because, boy, she's hit the nail on the head for us. Because we don't like campgrounds either. Well, let's see. Where do we start? Let's start with Florida. First of all, there are a lot of great spots in Florida, but most of them you will find are a concrete pad surrounded by giant Class A motorhomes, many times by seasonal renters who are there for months on an end. You park your Class B and you're like trapped between skyscrapers. So That's not our favorite thing, too. And same with shuffleboard, although it's pickleball now. That's a little more active of a sport. That's a lot of fun for many of the people down there. But I feel her pain about that.
It's different in Florida than other parts in the country. Florida, there isn't much real estate there, and there's a lot of people that want to go there in the winter, and you're just kind of jammed right in.
Now, I was immediately going to say, we love Florida state parks. And I have never found a state park in Florida that is jammed and covered like we said. Now, many of them are very hard to get in, and they're sold out for a year in advance, but there are ways to get around that. You want to look every day for cancellations. We had a tip last week in episode 106 from somebody about, we passed that on, and how you can actually have there's a service for $3 that will check it hourly and get you a reservation in these places as cancellations come in. So state parks are where you want to stay in Florida. And they're not that lonely because they're crowded. They're not lonely at all.
Isn't there a 2-week limit?
2 weeks at a time, yes. You can't stay at most parks, or and sometimes some of them are even 10 days, but mm-hmm. that's okay. You can just, you know, go to another one. But we just love state parks. You mentioned the Naples area. The Everglades National Park has, there are just a terrific, couple of terrific campgrounds out there. One in the national park and one's a Florida state park right near there. They're gorgeous state parks, and the Everglades are really fun. It's wide open. It's wilderness. There's lots of places to hike and walk, and it's a great spot. And where else do we? Up in the middle of the state, we like that Blue Springs State Park. That is beautiful. That's where you can see the manatees in the wintertime. It's a beautiful spring area. Henderson State Park up in the Panhandle, gorgeous Grayton Beach State Park up there. I could go on and on.
Yeah, they're all filled. You got to do it. You got to reserve about a year in advance.
You do, except we find people that get in all the time, but you have to be smart about it. You want to call. Most of these parks are run by an outfit called Reserve America. Almost all the state parks in the country now work through this website. And you can check a lot of these stuff availability online, and there are services available that will check, and for a small fee will check even as much as every 10 minutes for a cancellation. And you will probably be able to find one for the time you want, which you say is October, which is right around the corner. So check that out. Most of the state parks have also first come, first serve sites. So get there first thing in the morning and you see what you can find. But I want to encourage you to use a state park in Florida. Florida has some of the nicest state parks we've found anywhere in the country. You just got to find the right one. Over on the East Coast, right on the Atlantic, Assagany, I think I can't pronounce it right. There's a state park that's right on the Atlantic Ocean up by St. Augustine.
And I would think in October, you should be able to get in.
You should. The snowbirds are just starting to come. What's the park we like down by St. Petersburg? It's at the tip of my tongue. Oh, DeSoto State Park, right on the water. They even have a beach there for dogs that you can take dogs on. So, good grief. Stay out of those big commercial ones with a concrete pad, but state parks. Well, she talked about being lonely. You want to talk about that, about being alone and stuff? You're never really alone in a park, and you're going to find kindred spirits wherever you go. So I would not worry too much about that. You're not out in the middle of the wilderness, even though there's wilderness around you. There'll be other campers, and you'll find yourself welcomed very much.
People are very friendly in Florida. Everybody's like a team.
Because everybody's from somewhere else. So congratulations on your new life, Joanne. And I wish we had met you when we were up at Tobermory, but we just want to encourage you state parks. That's where you want to go. They're awesome. All right. Let's see. From Florida interest, here's somebody that I suspect lives out California way by the question they ask.
I would like to know if you have any suggestions on the best side or left side surfboard racks for Road Trek 190 popular 2008. I found VertiRack website, but I'm wondering if there are any other options that you know of. Thanks.
Wow, that's a great question. That's for a surfboard. We usually get questions, and we'll talk about that in a minute, about kayaks. And that's something I'm really anxious to get my hands on. In fact, wait till you hear my solution in a minute. But
and I hope you don't decide you need a surfboard rack. That's all I got to say.
Well, no, I don't need a surfboard rack. I'm not a surfer.
Yet.
The day's young, though. He's the listener's talking about a site called Veritrack, and it's spelled V-E-R-T-I-R-A-C-K. It's actually Vertirack, V-E-R-T-I-R-C-K, Vertirack. And they have some really nice rack-mounted surfboard mounts that you can use. They're racks. You can store two of them. They mount on the driver's side, and they mount across they mount horizontally. You put your surfboards horizontally across the driver's side. This company specializes in ladders, in racks for ladders on sprinters and vans and different kinds of trucks. But they make a surfboard rack that is side mounted. The racks go portrait size, if you want to say it that way, or horizontally. It's called Vertirack, Vertirack, V-E-R-T-I-R-A-C-K. I will put a link to that site on our road trekking blog in the show notes for this episode. So you would go to roadtrekking.com/107, and you'll find a link for that. Scroll down in the questions area, and you'll find it. But I get that question a lot about kayaks, and we've seen all sorts of different things that people have kind of rigged up themselves for kayaks, but I have now found the ultimate kayak rack for a road trek, and it's rvkayakracks.com, as it sounds, all one word, rvkayakracks.com. These are really cool racks, and you mount your kayak on the back of your van vertically. In other words, the bottom's at the bottom and the top goes to the top. They aren't horizontal. So they are like standing up at the back of your RV in a rack. The rack mounts into the trailer hitch. And for a Class B, they recommend a kayak no longer than 10 feet. This kayak rack, they have a couple of different solutions. The one that really has my attention lets you take two kayaks, see, so Jennifer, I could get you a kayak of your own, and it will also hold two bicycles.
And what about Bo? Does he get a kayak?
Bo's going to ride with you. No, I think Bo would go in a kayak. So you can mount up to two kayaks and up to two bicycles in these racks. Now, you haven't asked me how much they cost.
No.
They cost as much as the kayak. The racks cost about $1,200, and the one that I really was taken with was the one that mounts two kayaks and two bikes. That's about $1,600, and then it costs a couple hundred bucks to ship them to you. But they're really very impressive racks. They have a video on their site. I'll put a link to them as well.
How far does that stick out? Does it stick out about a foot and a half?
No, yeah, about that far, not any further than that. So not bad at all. Just like we used to have that big stowaway storage rack that we used to carry. It doesn't stick out even that far. If you have a spare tire on your back, they can even they make these custom made, and they can even work around that. So I'm probably going to get one kayak. This is the way to do it. They say you shouldn't on an RV van. It might be a little better with ours because we're so tall with the Sprinter, but it shouldn't be much more than 10 feet because you don't want to take all that drag because the rack's going up and down.
I can just picture that thing. Yeah.
No, they're really stable. I'll put a link up, and there's a video that they have, but you got to check it out. RV Kayak Racks, rvkayakracks.com, and that's for their RV racks for kayaks, and then there's Vertirack for surfboards. And again, links on the show notes for this episode. So I'm pretty excited about that. I think it's good I didn't get that break in half folding kayak that I was going to get a couple of months ago. So now I can get a real kayak. You're not looking nearly as excited as I am.
You don't want the blow up one anymore?
No, no. I saw a video of a shark biting an inflatable boat and I decided I didn't want that happening in a kayak. So I gave up on that. All right, another question.
Hey, Mike, my name is Matt Fitzwater. I'm calling from Charlotte, North Carolina, and I have two questions for you. First of all, I really enjoy the podcast and have learned a lot from what you and the other road checkers have done for the community. I'm a pop-up owner, recently bought one this past spring. My first question has to do with the Verizon Jetpack that you talk about on a lot of the episodes. I'm just curious on how that works. Is it a one-time fee that you purchase it from Verizon, or is it a monthly fee, and is it based off data usage, or is it unlimited? And all those details would really be appreciated. Thinking about getting one and just had some questions about that. The second question that I have pertains to when you're camping and family members come with you, or neighbors or friends. You know, we really enjoy hosting people that come with us, and we want to do a good job of preparing them for what to expect in regards to the unit. I mean, obviously, they know they're camping, so there's hiking and bugs and campfires and all of those good things, but I just want to make sure that our guests feel comfortable. So just curious on what your experiences have been on that, and, you know, I'll get several questions of, can we sleep in the camper with you? Is there a refrigerator? How does this work? You know, a lot of the folks have never been RVing before. So just curious on how you would go about preparing a friend, a neighbor, or a guest for coming camping with you. Really appreciate the work on the podcast. Enjoy listening every week and look forward to meeting you soon. Have a great day. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Matt, from North Carolina. And that's how we started off with a pop-up. And they're great devices. Well, let's see. We got a two-part question. I'll take the first part, which is has to do with the Jetpack. The Jetpack, that's the one that works with Verizon and Verizon Wireless. There are also similar data cards like that, Wi-Fi data cards that you can get for AT&T and for Sprint and whatever your provider is. But we're all Verizon, and we use the Jetpack. And what it is it's a little card that serves as a Wi-Fi hub for all of our devices. Yes, you could use just the hotspot connector on your phone, and a lot of people do that. But this one allows you to connect up to 15 devices at once, and I think it gets you a little better signal, a little better cellular signal, and thus a little better Wi-Fi signal. We've been using it now for years and wouldn't go anywhere without it. So you asked the question about how do you pay for it? Well, the devices, you can buy them outright for about $199. But what most people do is, just like the cell, they buy a two-year contract for $49. So you get the device for $49 and you just say you'll use it for 2 years. And you don't have to use it every day or anything like that, but that's the way to get it, is to get it for $49. And then in terms of data, it is just like another device. It costs you $10 a month extra because it's a line, another line to your connection. So $49 and then $10 more a month. And then whenever you turn it on and use it, the data that comes through it, it just shares that data from whatever plan that you have, from whatever your data bucket is, it just shares it with that. So we absolutely love this thing. I use it all the time. I leave it permanently in our RV. I turn it on when we get in it, and one of us can surf while the other one drives. We get all of our email, and I can say it doesn't really eat up any more data than we would normally. My laptop, Jen's laptop, our phones, the cell connection, my Canary security system, all that runs through this thing, and we love our Jetpack. So that's that part. Now, the second part of your question has to do with inviting people camping, hosting them with you.
And what comes to my mind first is, how many people does your pop-up comfortably sleep? And do you have a refrigerator in it? Do you have a heater, an AC? What do you have as far as a facility for a bathroom? That comes to mind. How big of a refrigerator? How close of friends are you with these people? Do you have kids? Do you have dogs? I mean, I don't know how many people you're planning on sleeping in this pop-up, but you must be able to sleep quite a few if you're thinking of hosting them. And these people that you bring, have they ever camped as a child? Are they familiar with camping? And what comes to mind easily is a tent, but an extra tent next to your pop-up camper, but that's kind of like second-class citizens or something if they're in the tent and you're up off the ground in a nice, warm pop-up camper. So just talk to the folks. Tell them what they're getting into.
And let them know that you're going to be very close together. And you're sharing, I would assume you have a bathroom in it. You're sharing that. And in the middle of the night, people are going to get up and you might wake up. You want to make sure they bring their own sleeping bag or whatever it is. And, you know, go from there. We don't bring other people camping with us. We meet people on the road, but they're in their own vehicles. So
because of the two of us and a 50-pound dog, there isn't a lot of room.
That's right. That's right. All right. One more question, and we still got a bunch I wish we could have gotten to, but we'll try and work them all in next week. But here's one from Jan.
Hi, Mike and Jennifer. I was just re-watching your video on how you fixed up your bathroom in your road trek CS Adventurous. My question is, where do you put the toilet paper? I don't see it in the video. And if Mike does take a shower, even a short one, how do you keep it from getting wet? In fact, how do you keep the towels from getting wet? Just a little more information would be great.
I remember the first time you took a shower in the road trek, our very first road trek, you forgot about the toilet paper and it got soaking wet. So we had to toss that roll of toilet paper. So the easiest thing is to remove that roll of toilet paper. Just put it outside while you take a shower. But the shower curtain should wrap around and cover up everything that shouldn't get wet.
Well, that's why it got wet, because I did not pull the shower curtain. I was around all the way around. I just put it a little bit there, and I basically just kind of rinsed off that first time I showered. Yeah, I just went out and looked a little while ago, and the just to make sure, because I never check it when I'm there. But the there's a shower curtain in it, and the toilet paper has a holder that's on the back of the bathroom door. And we keep our towels on a rack that is on the back of the bathroom door. So the shower curtain is circular. It goes right around the whole shower bathroom area, but on the inside of the bathroom door. So none of this stuff is going to get wet if you're careful, if you close the shower curtain. And that's the secret. So
it shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, no problem.
And if you're worried, just set it outside the door.
Yeah, you can. It's just a little rack. It just sits on a little rack, and you can take it off. But I noticed in a lot of RVs, they are mounting the toilet paper inside the shower cubicle, and then they have like a little shield, a little plastic cover that's over the top of it to keep it from getting wet. But in the road treks, we've had three road treks, they mount it, the toilet paper holders on the door, and that's on the other side of the shower curtain, so it's not going to get wet.
And I looked at that little plastic shield, and I questioned how well that would work with keeping it from getting wet.
Yeah, I'll stay with what we have. I think what we have is the best solution on the road truck. So, well, as I said, we have a lot of questions. We could have gone on another 20 minutes, 30 minutes with them, but we'll save some for next week. And we're getting so many now with our leave voicemail message that we love to get your questions. And we thank you. Well, we also try and answer our email questions from time to time. But if you have a question or a comment on everything we said, here's how you do it.
Want to be part of the podcast? Ask a question. Leave a comment. Look on the right side of Mike's RoadTrekking.com blog and click the send voicemail button. We welcome listener voices and love your questions.
This part of the podcast is brought to you by Van City RV in St. Louis and their partner dealerships, Creston RV in Kalispell, Montana, and Wagon Trail RV in Las Vegas. Three dealerships, all of which specialize in Class B motorhomes. And they sell it from those three locations. They're all owned by the same folks. You can mix and match whichever dealer you want to find that has the one that you want. And the beauty of them all is make your deal, make it on the phone or online, and then travel out there, get in an airplane, fly there to whatever city it's in. They will meet you at the airport, take you to the dealership. Your unit will be all prepped, and they will reimburse you then up to $500 towards your airfare. The thing about these guys, if you're looking for a Class B, that's what they specialize in. They sell road treks. They sell pleasure ways, leisure travel vans, the new Chinook brand. So just go VanCityRV.com, CrestonRV.com, or WagonTrailRV.com. From VanCityRV.com is our buddy Dan the Van Man, who tells us about this week's specials.
Thanks, Mike. Hey, we got two great deals this week. We have a 2015 Road Trek 210 Popular. We're going to sell this at a ridiculously low price. You can check that out at VanCityRV.com. We also have a 2016 190 Popular with twin beds. Both of them are going to go out the door at great prices. So give us a call at 1-800-467-3905.
Time now for RV basic training. Tips, tricks, and how-to info to make you a happy camper.
Well, you heard us talk earlier about boondocking, and that's what we do. It's camping without being plugged into commercial power or having to go to a crowded commercial campground. Now, we like campgrounds. We use campgrounds, but our favorite style and the reason we camp the way we do in our Road Trek CS Adventures XL with solar and all that stuff is so we can get out there and get away from crowds and truly experience nature in the middle of nowhere. That's, I think, the so many people. That's, I think, behind a big part of the boom in Class B sales, small camper van type RVs, is so people can go boondock, like in a national forest or a state forest. On an episode of the podcast we recorded a year or so ago, Road Trekking Reporter and veteran boondocker Camp Skunk, we sat down and we did an interview with Camp Skunk on some things that you need to consider for those who maybe have never boondocked or about to do it for the first time. I'm going to give you a couple of them here, but you can go to that whole interview. You can listen to that whole thing. It's a long, extended interview about boondocking basics that we did with Camp Skunk at roadtrekking.com/101. It's roadtrekking.com/39. Roadtrekking.com/39. That's where the interview that we did with him, it was kind of boondocking basics. Roadtrekking.com/39 will take you to that one we do with him. But here's some things if you are considering, you want to make sure that they're on your radar. The first thing is animal safety. Now, I don't know where you're going to go, but for most of us, it's in the wilderness someplace, and that means there's animals. So you need to know what kind of wildlife are out there. The one that's going to cause you the most preparation time is bears, particularly this time of year in fall. Bears are quickly gobbling up every bit of food they can get, preparing to hibernate, so they're very active. And you want to make sure that there'll be signs that you're in bear country, but Even if, you know, you just do some basic research, you'll know if there's bears in the area or if they're native to that particular stretch of country. And make sure that you don't have any food outside the unit when you're not there. I mean, yeah, you can cook your meal and stuff, and but then clean up your campsite. Don't leave anything out. If there's bear-proof bins that you can store things, use those. Bring them in your RV at night. But not just bears. You want to watch out for raccoons, for foxes. Some places have wild horses, wild burros. They'll all wander into your campsite. You also want to keep food away for mice. Mice will be attracted to it as well. And if that's the case, so will snakes. I hate to use that term. I'm making it sound like this is stuff that you got to be, oh, no. I've never seen a snake in our campsite, but we always practice a clean site. We do not leave food lying around. And that's the first thing, particularly in when you were boondocking. The second thing about boondocking is water management. Because you have what you carry in your freshwater tanks, or if you have some bottled water that you bring in. So the first key to water management is use less. Take very short baths, sponge baths if you want, or what we call the Navy baths or sailor baths, where you put on the shower, you wash yourself off real quick, rinse yourself off, then turn off the water, lather up, then turn on the water briefly to get the soap off. That's the only way you should shower in your RV, particularly if you're boondocking. If you're using your sink, for washing dishes and stuff, try collecting gray water in a container and then you dump it outside instead of having to fill up your tanks. It'll save that from folding up as well. Choose your site carefully. Make sure you're not in the highest spot around so that you can stay safe from lightning. And then if you rely on solar power, you want to pick a spot that's not too shady, so in the sun. A simple thing there. And then you want to also conserve your batteries, so practice good light management. Use light sparingly at night. First of all, it's just, you know, you don't want to have, like, you're not in a campground, you know, those people with their flashing lights and their Christmas tree lights, and they have lights everywhere. I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's fun. I guess in a campground, it's okay, but certainly not when you're boondocking. Your batteries will last much longer if you just practice minimal lights on at night, so you're not lighting up the whole wilderness. There's some other things that Camp Skunk talks about that you'll want to hear, and you'll hear about his boondocking 101 lessons if you just go to our previous episode where we interviewed him. It's at roadtrekking.com/39. Marvy Basic Training is brought to you on the podcast by Campers Inn, the nation's largest family-operated RV dealership with 15 locations on the East Coast. You know, choosing the right RV dealership is as important as choosing the right RV. Campers Inn was founded on the belief that every customer deserves to be treated with dignity and respect, and that's why they offer the integrity pricing guarantee. All of their advertised prices include freight, prep, orientation, detailing, so you'll never be surprised by last-minute upcharges and fees. Campers Inn believes strongly in being very transparent, and they strive to make customers feel confident that they found the perfect RV for their budget and their dreams. Since 1966, Campers Inn RV has become the nation's largest family-owned dealership with 15 locations across the East Coast. Come down and learn why Campers Inn has been the RVer's trusted resource for 50 years. Go to campersinn.com, campersinn.com. Their professional staff and their certified trained service personnel are driven by the custom, by the motto and commitment to treat each customer fairly and with great respect, just like their family.
News. Mike's got news.
RV news, travel news, tips and trends about the small motorhome lifestyle.
Here's the road trekking news of the week.
Oh, lots of quick stories. Everybody talks about cougars and mountain lions, and you know, we kind of think they're out west, and lately they've been seen across the upper Midwest. Now they've been seen down in Tennessee. Tennessee Wildlife Resources Agency has confirmed the sighting of a cougar near Waynesboro, Tennessee, in Wayne County in Tennessee. A trail camera made it real evident. They captured the cat's image in early September, and the agency, as it does when it receives reports accompanied by credible evidence, sent investigators there, and they're seeing a cougar. They're pretty sure. They note that cougars can travel long distances. They've seen it 8 different times now over the last year, with the previous 5 confirmations in Humphreys County. So this is the first documented sighting in Wayne County, not too far from Nashville, and they have a whole list of places where you can see it. But other states surrounding Tennessee are also confirming the presence of western cougars, which have gradually been expanding their range over the past several years. Out west, good news for those near the Yellowstone River in the state of Montana. Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks have reopened the last closed segment of the Yellowstone River. If you'll remember, we've reported this a couple of times. There has been a major fish kill on the Yellowstone, and folks just weren't sure what it was, and they were trying to contain it, so they closed those rivers to any recreational use. They slowly have reopened them, and the final 17-mile stretch has now been opened. This fish kill affected the mountain's whitefish population, and now they want the public to be aware. If you should see lots of dead or dying fish, to please tell people that to get a hold of Montana Fish and Wildlife They will close it again if that's the case, but they're worried about the impact on Yellowstone cutthroat trout, which is a very popular species in Montana. But it has been reopened, and there's been some low interest federal loans to help businesses that were affected by the Yellowstone. A lot of tourism places there that had to, had really took a big financial hit. So that's good news out in Yellowstone. Up north in Canada, up around Banff, Canada, and Kootenay and Yoho, they have been trying to figure out what to do about grizzly bears, as they have become very popular around various campgrounds in western Banff, Kootenay, and Yoho National Parks. And so just like they manage garbage and human food, they have identified that there has been a real problem involving bear attracting buffalo berry bushes. They love buffalo berries, and so they are now going to remove buffalo berry bushes from the Lake Louise RV campground in Banff, as well as the Marble campground in Kootenay and the Kicking Horse and Monarch campgrounds up in Yoho. All four are considered front country campgrounds, and it means they're easily accessible by motor vehicles. And they've had a lot of bears there because even though the berry season is over, they still were seeing a lot. So they said, we're going to get rid of those bushes, or at least bring them down. And it won't have an impact on the overall food supply for the bears, but it'll hopefully cause them to go elsewhere. So the buffalo berry bushes are going to get removed in Banff. Out in California, there's a big controversy out there in Mountain View, out along the San Francisco suburbs. You know how expensive housing is up there. I mean, it is terribly expensive, among the most expensive in the country. Well, out in Mountain View, which is a big Silicon Valley tech center, they've been noticing that more and more people are living in RVs that they're parking along the street. They simply can't afford housing out there, so they've been camping on the street in RVs, and now they're debating about this and trying to figure out ways that they can stop RV people from living on the streets out there because they can't afford houses. How about if you just like did something about your housing prices? There are also a lot of homeless people, and the homeless are living in RVs, and officials are getting lots of complaints about it. So look for a crackdown out there. No RVs out in Mountain View. And last story is about this big, we've been talking a long time about the RV boom, how popular it is around the country. Well, it's spurring a whole bunch of housing developments in places like Nevada, Arizona, and Florida, where developers are catering to this niche audience of RV owners, a lot of them snowbirds. So what they're doing is they're building houses with RV storage right next to them. In other words, they will build a big garage with a high roof so you can put a Class A right next to your house. And the same thing, well, you can put any kind of RV in there. You basically have your RV parked underneath a cover right next to your house. These folks are welcoming them. High-end motorhomes can cost well over $120,000, $30,000, up to $500,000. So that's a big investment that people don't want to leave sitting out on the street. And so they're building houses that will let you park your RV in a oversized garage right next to the place you live. So there you go. That's our RV news of the week. We'll put links to all of these on our website and the show notes for this episode, which is roadtrekking.com/107. The RV news of the week brought to you by Aldi, A-L-D-E, the only name in heat that you need to know for your RV. You heard Jennifer and I talking a little while ago how we had to turn the heater on this past weekend as we were camping, boondocking up in the woods of northern Michigan. Temperature dipped into the 40s, and it was time to warm it up a little bit. Well, our Aldi kicked out some heat. We had our grandkids with us, and Jennifer had the window open and the heat on. But what she really liked, and what the kids just really liked, was the heated floors. You get up in the middle of the night, or you're padding around in the early morning, you know, and that's still chilly out there. Oh, it's nice to have those heated floors. Well, that's what you can do with Aldi, A-L-D-E. Aldi's system is a hydronic system. And the reason we just love this so much for RV is because it brings you so many features and benefits that traditional RV heating systems can't begin to touch. For example, silent radiant heat. We're talking the high-end baseboard type heat you find in luxury homes. Well, that's the Aldi hydronic system. It is silent. There's no forced air noise, no fan always on. And because of that, it's so efficient. It draws less than 1 amp on 12 volts DC. And because it doesn't gobble up anymore, and it's so efficient because it heats the water and the water stays heated longer, it will use roughly 40%. You'll save and extend the life of your propane roughly 40% over forced air systems. It's now available on many different RV platforms. So when you're shopping for an RV, tell them that you want it to have Aldi, the Aldi system, A-L-D-E. It is the only name you need to know when you're choosing a heating system for your RV.
Traveling with technology. It's time now for our RV Tech Tip of the Week.
Well, we've got a great one this week for everybody who takes a lot of photos on your RV trips. Let's go to our buddy Steve Van Ditter from Verizon Wireless.
Hi, Mike. I'm sure as you're traveling about the country, you are taking a ton of pictures. And with today's amazing smartphone cameras, I'm guessing most of them end up on your phone, right? Well, as you know, these photos can take up precious megabytes and eventually gigabytes of space. So what do you do when your phone says you're out of space? No need to dump them. A free app from Google called Google Photos can save the day. This app, which is free for iOS and Android devices, will automatically back up your photos and videos to the cloud. And the best part, you can store unlimited pictures up to 16 megapixels for free. You can't beat that. Now you'll never have to worry about whether or not to save or delete your amazing photos, or whether you have enough room for that next must-have app. And should you lose your phone, just download the app onto your next smartphone and all of your pictures will still be there. Google Photos also makes finding your pictures a breeze as well. If you search in the app for Mount Rushmore, for instance, it'll pull all of your pictures from there. Or maybe you remember you took a picture of a cool flower but can't remember where or when. Just search for flowers and it'll pull all the pictures you took with a flower in them. Basically, if you can remember something in the photo, you can find it with ease. Google Photos does backup over the internet, so to save on your precious data, make sure you set the app to only backup when you're connected to Wi-Fi. So go ahead and snap away. With this week's Traveling Technology Tip, I'm Steve Van Dinter from Verizon.
I've been using Google Photos for a long time. I'll tell you another way it's really nice is I use a MacBook Pro laptop, and I use a Samsung Galaxy S7 smartphone, and they don't really communicate as well as like the Apple iPhone does with the MacBook Pro, but I use Google Photos. So all of my photos that I take with my Android phone are backed up in Google Photos, and then when I'm going to use them to put them in a blog post or something, or I want them on my laptop, I just go to Google Photos on the laptop, and there they are. It's a great service. There you go. And I can do this all on the road where I manage all of my wireless needs, my podcasts. These are huge files. I send these in from the road. My NBC technology pieces, I send those in from the road. I update the blog from the road. And I do it with my Verizon wireless system because Verizon operates America's most reliable wireless network. 112 million connections prove it, as do survey after survey. When it comes to network quality, Verizon ranks highest across all six regions of U.S. wireless providers in the country. Network performance is just always rated number one. Can your network say that? If you are stuck with the wrong network, you can unstick yourself really simply. Just go to Verizon and stop in any Verizon store and get yourself switched over.
Time now for Off the Beaten Path, a unique road trekking RV podcast travel suggestion you probably won't find in a guidebook. Here's Mike.
Well, our regular Off the Beaten Path correspondents, Tom and Patty Burkett, check in this week. They were in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and they took a very fun ride on a rather unusual railroad with a lot of history.
Hi, Mike and Jennifer. We recently stood on a mountainside overlooking the lights of Pittsburgh on a summer night. The Pirates were playing baseball, City Park soccer fields were lit for the evening games, and the streets were full of pedestrians enjoying the restaurants and museums of the downtown. We achieved this marvelous view thanks to a device built in 1877, the Duquesne Incline. If you travel at all in Europe, you'll be familiar with the funiculars that shuttle passengers from riverside to mountaintop in many locations, but they're a rarity in the USA.
The Duquesne Heights, then called Coal Hill and now known as Mount Washington, were home to four of these vertical railways in the early 20th century. They hauled both passengers and freight up the face of this mountain and made it possible for businesses to serve clientele both in the heights and the city below. The viewing deck at the top offers not only great vistas, but a good deal of history around the topic of the flood of 1936.
On St. Patrick's Day of that year, a wall of water swelled the Allegheny River and created what the New York Times called a disaster of undreamt of proportions that beggars the imagination. The entire downtown was underwater, much of it to the second story of buildings. Power was gone, the public water supply was out of commission, and fire crews were unable to respond to the many blazes caused by ruptured gas lines. The river reached a historic 46 feet that day, and it took Pittsburgh decades to recover.
The inclines were valuable during those days, operating continuously to move people, equipment, animals, and supplies from the usable roads above to the stricken city below. Looking down, it's easy to see how the narrow river valley could suffer such a calamity and might again.
Just down the road, you'll find the city of Johnstown. In the spring of 1889, Johnstown's rivers were swollen to capacity by melting snow when a dam just above town gave way. 14 miles of Pennsylvania countryside swept down the valley in a 40-foot wall of debris, scouring most of Johnstown off the map. The survivors settled into tents provided by towns across America. Clara Barton came from Washington, D.C. with the newly formed Red Cross. And on the steep hillside above Johnstown, construction began on another inclined plane.
The Johnstown plane, completed in 1891, helped evacuate residents before the floods of 1936 and 1977. It, too, is still in operation, and for a few dollars, you can ride this piece of history and look down from the heights of Eagles. Local ice cream, cityscapes, and creaky old machines. Spend some time in western Pennsylvania. Happy travels.
Hey, if you have a tip that you would like to make an off-the-beaten-path report about something fun you've seen, phone it in. If I use your off-the-beaten-path report, I'll send you a free hat. So just use the leave voicemail link on the right-hand side of the roadtrekking.com blog and send us into favorite places that you've been around the country. Off the Beaten Path. Our Off the Beaten Path segment is brought to you each week by Allstays, the internet's number one RV and camping app since 2010. No matter where you are and how far you happen to be off the beaten path, Allstays can help you find that next and perfect campground, that perfect place to put an end to your day and give you a nice rest in beautiful country. The Allstays app is based on your location. You set it up however you want. What do you want it to show you? What kind of campgrounds? You want state forest campgrounds, county park campgrounds, big resort style campgrounds, KOAs. You want just a Walmart parking lot. However you want to set it up, KOA, Walmart, campgrounds, you open up your app and it will show you on a map around you where the nearest campground meeting your criteria happens to be. Not only that, you can have it find rest areas along the interstates. Whatever it is you're looking for, traveler information is what the Allstays RV and camping app specializes in. For 16 years now, they've been doing this. They also have a free website, allstays.com, where you can have an enhanced subscription and get even more information. But this is the source for whatever you want. You want to find, as I said, those Walmart parking lots where you can overnight for free, or Cracker Barrels. You can stay there free as well. Do you know that? Or truck stops, dump stations, supplies, RV services, bridges, steep road grades, anything you need to be alerted to, the Allstays app can tell you. It's the only app you need. Allstays. Check it out.
Traveling North America in a Class B motor home. This has been Road Trekking the Podcast with journalist Mike Wendland. Got a question for next week? Click the send voicemail link on the roadtrekking.com blog. Till then, we'll see you out there. Road Trekking. Road Trekking. Oh.
Wow, where the time went. We're an hour and 10 minutes almost into this episode, and I still had like a whole slew of other questions that came in this week that people wanted us to talk about and answer, so we'll try and get to more of those next week as well. Hey, we thank you so much for listening, and I don't know where you are, but make sure you get out and enjoy the countryside. This is the best time. Now, in the South, the heat is starting to finally break. In the North and the East and the Upper Northwest, the skies in the West are, in the West as well, the skies are filled with fall colors and the blue. Oh my gosh, great photos, great time to be outside, great time to RV. Do it before it gets too cold. Thank you again for listening to the program. It's a pleasure to have you put us in your ear each week. Look forward to hearing you and talking to you on our Facebook group. Just check that out. It's up 24/7. Lots of people always on Facebook ready to talk about RVing. And we look forward to getting your voicemail messages as well. Till next week, on behalf of my wife, Jennifer, we'll see you out there road trekking.